Yeah, the Monday edition, Mr. Irrelevant. I'm Alex Strofe with you from the Everlight Solar Studio in downtown Madison. Lots to get into today. It was a heck of a weekend. I'm very tired today, but good to be with you nonetheless. Producer Tiny Hands with me as well. Hunter Vaughn back from his trip to Cincinnati, Ohio to see the Kelce brothers live and in person. How was your Skyline chili, Hunter?
Didn't go with any Skyline chili.
What are we doing in Cincinnati then? Isn't that like their thing?
Yeah, it is. And like there was even, they do No Dumb Questions on their podcast, and they even did that, and they had a question about Skyline chili. And just my wife and sister-in-law, they weren't in for chili, and I wasn't going to drag them to Skyline just so I could eat something. Like, so... Yeah, I passed on the Skyline.
Yeah, you're unbelievable. Was your trip good, at least? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, it was good. Indiana, driving through that state just sucks.
Yeah.
Like, it's worse than Iowa. It's terrible. Okay. I hate it. It was good. Got a t-shirt at the show. My wife was maybe a little disrespectful to our show.
Why is that?
She asked me if I was going to wear it today, and I said no because I'm on the podcast. I'm not going to wear merch from a competitor the podcast.
Yeah, okay.
So, like, and she was like, "You guys aren't competitors. They're the number one sports podcast in the world." I'm like, "That's great. Yeah, we're also a sports podcast."
I would guess we're probably somewhere between number 200 and number 500. I would guess that's the range we live in.
That's fine.
That might be even high, but...
Only 199 places to go.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, they don't know we exist. I mean, maybe they do now. I don't know if you had any interactions with the Kelce brothers during your trip to Cincinnati.
No, but when the show, they'll air that on YouTube, I think, on Wednesday.
Okay.
There's a number of times where when they go to shots of Jason during the show, or as well as when they had Joe Burrow on,
yeah,
you'll be able to see me along like the top part of your screen.
Very nice.
So I made appearances on their show.
Okay, we'll grab some screenshots of that coming up. Busy weekend for me. Let's start with Friday, Hunter. We went over to the Packers tailgate tour, which was in town in Sun Prairie, just outside of Madison. And it was a benefiting Sunshine Place. They did an event at Buck and Honey's. They did an event at Angel Park, which is where I was. So exciting show news. Packers left guard Elgton Jenkins will join us Wednesday. Got to catch up with him. We recorded the conversation on Friday. That will air Wednesday. Elgton Jenkins, Packers left guard, will join us to talk about the offseason, to talk about Jordan Love's development. Some really good stuff from Elgton Jenkins. So looking forward to airing that conversation coming up on Wednesday's show. Eric Name, by the way, from The Athletic, covers the Bucks with the Bucks regular season coming to an end last night. He's going to join us to discuss the upcoming matchup between the Pacers and the Bucks, the end of the Bucks regular season, and what the heck can we expect with this Giannis Antetokounmpo in injury. So Eric Name, by the way, will join us just over 10 minutes from now. But so this tailgate tour, Hunter, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, right? Like, I had no expectation of what it was. I grew up in Green Bay, but I've never experienced the long-running tailgate tour. My first takeaway, so Mark Murphy kind of handles, you know, the opening, right? So he introduces the six players, three current, three former that were there. The current players were Elgton Jenkins, Kenny Clark, and Rashid Walker. The former players were Alex Green, Mike Daniels, and friend of show, Brian Bulaga. And so Mark Murphy kind of opens it up. He's introducing the folks there in Sun Prairie. And I got to tell you what, Hunter, I like Mark Murphy a lot more than I did last week.
Really?
Yeah, I thought he crushed it.
Wow.
I thought he was likable. I thought he was relatable for the first time in a long time when I've watched something Mark Murphy said. Because anybody that's listened to this show for a long time or has listened to me on ESPN Wisconsin for over the course of the last 3.5 years knows I'm incredibly critical of Mark Murphy. I think he can be kind of a doofus. I think he puts his foot in his mouth a lot. I think the Murphy Takes Five column he writes every month can certainly be problematic. So I don't know. I thought he was good. And I was quite impressed with what he had to say. So I think I like Mark Murphy a little bit more than I used to. So that was takeaway one from the tailgate tour. Tailgate two is I love how excited people get. People just are about the Green Bay Packers, right? It's the middle of April, and everybody's asking, you know, peppering questions about Brazil in the upcoming season and contract negotiations. And at one point, an older woman asked about Peacock. With the opening game, at least in Madison, because it's not a home TV market, you know, why are we going to Peacock? And everybody in attendance booed the idea of stream-only games, at least in Madison, because Milwaukee and Green Bay are technically the home, well, not technically, they are considered the home markets for the Packers. So those games air on cable still, even if it's a Peacock exclusive or an Amazon Prime on Thursday night exclusive. Those games will still air in Green Bay and Milwaukee. That's not the case in Madison. So that got a loud boo, which I thought was interesting. People got opinions on Peacock. And Hunter, you and I have said before, we like Peacock. We think it's one of the better streaming platforms out there in terms of selection, right? That's you that has that opinion?
Yeah. Compared to, I kind of tie it with Amazon just because Amazon has so much from those. But then, yeah, I like Peacock. I think their broadcasts are really good. They look incredible. And it's one of those where because of the other stuff you get with it for the streaming, especially if you're a Big Ten sports fan, like you just get so much that you're gonna watch throughout the year that I'm okay with spending the like $8 a month for it. So it's, I think it's getting a little old of people being upset about the streaming services. Like it's here, it's happening. There will always be something. Now they're going to do stream exclusives for everything. Now you just got to deal with it, and this is just the reality of how you're going to have to consume sports and consume media now.
Hold on. You're right. I agree with everything you said. But you, if you were in the room, I feel like you would have been the type of guy to be like, "Yeah, they're right. They got a point here." Madison should just also be considered a home market.
Yes.
And I don't know how that works, but that's silly to me. Ever since I've lived here the last 3.5 years, that's been silly to me. That I'm younger. I'm 25, so I have access to all these streaming platforms, and I pay for them, but I don't know. I feel bad for the older generation that doesn't.
And what's really weird is, so I've talked about, I spent 1 year at UW River Falls for college. That's the Minneapolis TV market. So even though not a Packer fan, yeah, every Sunday then it was Packers would be playing. Didn't matter. We got the Vikings game on at the same time.
Interesting.
So it's one of those where TV markets are weird. I think if it's a team within your state and you're like the Packers, it's the only pro team in the state, you should just get, you should be able to air it throughout the state. Like, that should just be a no-brainer. So that is weird from that aspect. But again, complaining about anything else being stream exclusive, like, it's just dumb.
You got an opinion on everything, man. I love it.
Yeah, I do.
So, Tailgate Tour was great. We'll air that Elton Jenkins conversation coming up Wednesday on the show. All right. Otherwise, in the weekend, I did, Hunter, you're gonna hate what I have to say. But I have to, because it's what I was technically dubbed as at two separate events this weekend. I participated in celebrity events. I played in a celebrity basketball game on Saturday benefiting Easter Seals of Wisconsin. For those of you not watching our video stream on the ESPN Madison, ESPN Milwaukee YouTube channels, Hunter wrote the graphic on the bottom, now says Alex Stroph thinks he's a big deal. No, I don't, right? Like, it made me uncomfortable. But I did participate in a celebrity basketball game Saturday, and I participated at my alma mater, my college radio station, the world's largest trivia contest. I participated in the celebrity phone shift. Now, here is some footage from the Easter Seals game on Saturday of me breaking free throws. Jim Rutledge of Rutledge and Hamilton on ESPN Madison guarded me. I got the ball on the right block. He fouled me. I got hammered. I went to the line. I missed them both. Right off the back of the iron both times. So 0 points for me. I had a little bit of an incident at halftime, which involved kind of an asthma attack and me visiting a toilet.
I knew you would potentially have to do that, and I'm so happy that you did.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, it wasn't bad, but I certainly had to take a lap. And here's some more videos. Oh, there was an alley-oop thrown to me by former Badgers football player Travis Beckham. We were on a fast break 2-on-1 against Rutledge, and he threw it up to me, and I bricked it off the side of the hoop. So certainly not my best performance at the Easter Seals celebrity basketball game. So there you go. There's that from this weekend. So 3.5 minutes is all I played, by the way. I mean, these dudes were running. And I just immediately didn't belong. I was also, me and Rutledge were also announcing the game, so we were doing the PA in the gym. I couldn't do it at halftime. I started reading something, and I had to take ginormous breaths because, like I said, kind of an asthma attack. It was not good. So I'm not an athlete, is what we've learned.
Shocker.
Yeah. I think I outplayed Rutledge, though. I thought I was better. I was the better player on the floor. And as you can see from some of the footage we just aired, I look the part better than Rutledge. So There you go. Celebrity weekend for a non-celebrity. I got to pretend to be a celebrity all weekend. It was good stuff. Hung out with the mayor of Stevens Point yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah. Mike Wiesa. Shout out to him. Great guy. I did not. I see Joseph on the YouTube chat asked, did Strope get in any good hacks on Rutledge? I did not. Although right when he joined, the game, we went and checked into the game at the same time. We were guarding each other, rightfully so. He was running point guard for their team. So he brought the ball up and immediately popped a three. I got a fingertip on it. He airballed it. But I don't want to tell anybody I got a fingertip on it because I just want him to live with the airball.
Except you just did. You could have just said that he airballed it.
Well, he did. I mean, it's a fact. He did. So.
Yeah, but then it goes as a block.
I don't think I got the block. I don't want it. I want my stat line to be 0-0-0-0, Tony Snell style. So anyway. All right, NBA playoffs, real basketball, are set now as the Milwaukee Bucks lose yesterday in Orlando. They also lose Friday at Oklahoma City. They finished the season as the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference. And look, I mean, yesterday was an embarrassing loss. They only scored 88 points. I don't know off the top of my head, but I imagine that is probably a season low or really close to it, especially since Doc Rivers took over in February. But 3 seed, the matchup's intriguing. I mean, there were storylines no matter what matchup the Bucks got, right? If they remained the 2 seed, they were either getting Philly or Miami. They fall to the 3 seed as the New York Knicks become the 2 seed, and now they know their matchup, right? No play-in implications for the Bucks. Now, coming up this week, Philly and Miami, still the 7 and 8 seed, but the winner of that game will get the New York Knicks rather than the Bucks. So the Bucks know their matchup. It's the Indiana Pacers. They'll tip off Sunday. And a couple of things from this, right, is we know what happened early on in the season when these teams played 5 times, both in the in-season tournament and just their normal divisional schedule early on in the year. Pacers went 4-1 against the Bucks. That would be a gentleman's sweep if you apply it to the how a playoff series plays out. Now, things that do need to be pointed out. A, as Sham Sharania points out earlier today on Twitter, saying, Giannis not looking great. The odds are not looking great for him coming up here to start the series. So from Sham Sharania and retweeted by Eric Name, who will join us in a moment. Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo calf injury is rehabbing daily, but there's some real doubt for his status to begin series versus Pacers on Sunday, sources say. Although Giannis has rare recovery ability, he's very much up in the air for game one. He does have tremendous recovery ability. We saw it during the title run back in 2021. The injury that looked like it could have ended his season, he comes back and is just phenomenal. So, yeah, that does exist, but it is a little nerve-wracking when your best player may not be available for at least the first couple games, I would guess, if not the entire series. I'm not a doctor. I'm not saying anything, but I'm very intrigued what that is. The other part. Adrian Griffin was the head coach for all 5 of those matchups earlier in the season. That feels like years ago at this point, right? Technically 3 head coaches for the Bucks this season if you count the interim Joe Prunty. So that was a long time ago when these two teams were battling back and forth. But you do remember the ball situation, Giannis and the basketball and the dust up in the tunnel between these two teams. There's a lot of storylines that very much excite me when it comes to Pacers Bucks, but obviously the storyline of potentially no Giannis does frighten me a little bit, but I prefer this over Philly, to be real honest with you. Philly with Embiid and no Giannis would scare me a lot more than Indiana coming to Milwaukee beginning on Sunday. So we'll see what happens in the play-in tournament this week, but Bucks Pacers game one Sunday at Fiserv Forum. Joining us now is a former Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year. You read him. He does a terrific job covering all things Milwaukee Bucks. Nobody better in the business than our buddy Eric Name, who joins us now in Mr. Irrelevant. And Eric, I just mentioned it, right? These two teams have some history this season. The ball dust up in the tunnel. Obviously, the 4-1 record for the Pacers against the Bucks, but that was all during the Adrian Griffin era. But from your perspective, as the best guy covering this team, there's plenty of storylines for you to dive into over the course of the next week as we lead up to game one.
Yeah, there's no shortage. You would think I would be able to exhaust all of them in 6 days by the time we get to Sunday, but I honestly might not be able to because it is just chock full of stories. It's a crazy series to kind of get into, especially with all the drama that they had previously, and then you add a Giannis injury on top of it, and now you're just in this situation where this is a whole lot going into the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, Eric, I just pulled up the tweet from Shams from earlier in the day, but Giannis' status very much up in the air for game one with the calf strain. That's intimidating. Obviously, you bring in a guy like Damian Lillard, if you know, worst case scenario, you lose a guy like Giannis, you still have tremendous offensive output. But no Giannis, the way this season has gone, I'm nervous. What do you think the status is for Giannis past game one? I mean, could he miss the whole series, or is it too soon to tell on that?
I think this is just a really difficult injury. I think when you kind of look back on Giannis and what he's done over the years, like, he goes down the Eastern Conference Finals. It's probably a month-long injury, maybe longer for most people. He was back in 6 days and played game one of the NBA Finals. Like, that's when we're talking about his rare ability to be able to recover. That's what we're talking about. That's what he can do. But at the same time, that was a knee injury. This is going to be a calf injury. And with calf injuries, you always have to be, very careful, and you have to be very cautious coming back from them, because, you know, the first story I wrote after the injury was like, okay, well, the Achilles is intact, but if you remember what happened to Kevin Durant in 2019, his Achilles was intact. He had a calf strain. He recovered and rehabbed from it for 4 weeks, and then he comes back in the NBA final games five, and there goes his Achilles.
Yeah.
And an Achilles injury is all of next season as well. It's part of the next season after that. So, like, calves are not something that you play with, and it doesn't matter, like, how much pain you can play through, you know, how well you can recover. If you have a calf issue, that's like the gateway to more serious injuries. So it's just something where you don't want to play around with it. You don't want to, you know, just, I guess, kind of tempt the gods, right? Like, it's a scary injury. So you just have to be really careful with it. And I think as you kind of go through all of this, I think it'll be really interesting to see once play-in occurs, when we get a full schedule, what that looks like. Last year in the playoffs, the Bucks played game one on Sunday and then didn't play again until Wednesday. If that's the case, you could be looking at a situation where if he doesn't play game one, he will have had 2 full weeks to rehab, recover, do the whole thing. And as you mentioned, Strofe, like, there's a real possibility that Damian Lillard and the Bucks at home is enough to win game one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real possibility that that's the case. The Pacers have not been a strong defensive team all season long. It's just going to turn into a shootout. And when you are at home, you tend to shoot a little bit better. And so maybe you can get, you know, a Bobby Portis 35-point night, or, you know, Pat Connaughton knocks in 5 threes, whatever it might be. Like, you can get some of those other things. So I just think it's going to be really wait and see with Giannis because of the specific injury that it is, not necessarily like, you know, it's so severe that he's going to be out all this time. These are just tricky injuries to come back from. And I think that is going to, you know, kind of lead to an abundance of caution from the Bucks and from Giannis himself.
That's really well said, Eric. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how it comes together, because it's referenced in Shams' tweet, and I think everybody's kind of pointed it out, the incredible recovery ability of Giannis that we saw in 2021. It's just impossible to predict that, though, dude. Like, and this is a weird one, like you said.
And we're still 6 days out, right? Like, and this is kind of when you're thinking about Giannis, this is what I can tell you, right? Like, the next night the Bucks play, it's a back-to-back, Tuesday, Wednesday, back-to-back. The next night you walk into the locker room, oh, Giannis isn't at his locker. But as you're walking through the hallways, oh, Giannis is in the trainer's room, on the table, getting worked on as we speak. And that's what you're talking about. There's a reason why he didn't go on this road trip. It was so that he could wake up in the morning, go to the practice facility, get in a workout, get some training done, get some rehab done, whatever it is, take a break, get some more rehab in, take a break, get some more rehab in. Like, this is, if you talk to him about, you know, the recovery process in those 6 days between the Eastern Conference Finals and the Finals, it is a 24-hour process. And that means, if, you know, you get all the way until Sunday, that's been 10 days of Giannis working around the clock with the best doctors in the world, the best training staff in the world to get himself back on the court. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think all of this becomes impossible to predict. I think that's why it's really hard to get a timeline. I think there's a timeline for normal people, and then there's a timeline for this crazy person that will do anything to get back on the floor. Like that's what I think makes all of this very difficult to see, which is why 6 days out, I think the way Shams kind of put it is accurate, and that is something that you have to be concerned about, but that could change in 3 days, that could change in 5 days, that could change in 6 days. So you just have to kind of let all this play out, and I'm sure it'll be an interesting week as that occurs.
I like that you defined him as a crazy person, because that feels very applicable to Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I was going to say, I think said it out of love, but no, that's he is a crazy person.
No doubt about it. But just add this Giannis injury right ahead of the playoffs to the already insane roller coaster of a season that it's been for the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't know how you view it, Eric, but for me, it's really hard to evaluate Doc Rivers. I mean, I try to do it from post-All-Star break to now, and I'm just going to use the term I just used for a second time. What a freaking roller coaster. 88 points last night. I don't know if that's the season low. You would probably know that. But 88 points in the regular season finale when most of your guys are playing, not pretty. I know they didn't play much late in the game when it was already out of hand. But how do you define the Doc Rivers era so far in Milwaukee? Because it's a really hard thing to do. But B, this is a team that has championship expectations going into the postseason.
I mean, I thought it was disappointing. I thought when Doc took over, he was right to say, like, you know, I wouldn't wish this on anyone, because it was a really hard stretch. That was the Bucks' toughest road trip coming into the All-Star break. The All-Star break is a time, or the period before the All-Star break is the time that's, you know, no one really wants to play. They're just trying to get to the All-Star break. And, you know, you have these lapses in, you know, the way that people play, the effort that they bring. And that to me was like, okay, that's all excusable. I can understand how that occurred, how there were struggles. All right, let's take a look at post-All-Star break. And post-All-Star break, they came out really strong. They performed well on the road. They beat the Minnesota Timberwolves in that first game right after the All-Star break. And to me, it looked like they had started to get to a spot where they were like building their professionalism. And it was like, all right, this is the team that they can be, and we're going to see, and it's going to be better now. And then they went on the road into the West Coast and they lose 3 of 4. And then, you know, you're thinking, okay, maybe that was a blip and things will get better. And then, you know, you have this just inexcusable, unfathomable 3-game stretch where they lose to 3 of the worst teams in the league. Mm-hmm. They were favored by 40 points across those 3 games. And, you know, they just lose over and over again. Wizards, Grizzlies, Raptors. And you're trying to really comprehend, like, how did this even happen? This team is way too good for that to occur. Even if they are feeling, you know, the April blues and trying to get to the end of the regular season, that just shouldn't happen. They're too talented to lose to those teams. And that's why I think ultimately, thus far, Doc Rivers has been a disappointment. And that can all get turned around with a great postseason performance. That can all, you know, go away if they manage to, you know, win this first round series and then in the second round beat whoever it ends up being on the other side of the bracket. And then all of a sudden you go to the Eastern Conference Finals and you're playing the Boston Celtics. All right, this is like why you were brought here. And I think throughout the playoffs, we're going to see a number of series, if the Bucks make a run, where this is the reason you were brought here. You talk about the Pacers. They give up 125 pretty much every time against the Pacers. They don't get back in transition. Doc Rivers comes in and says, one of my focuses as coach is to be a better transition defense team. And they have been, except for a couple games where they weren't. And that's where you have to try to figure out, like, okay, are they actually a better transition defense team? That was why you were brought in here. One of the reasons, make this team more professional defensively. So if you can get by the Pacers, that is a test that you have passed. Great job. Here we go. Then you go into the second round and, you know, you're playing a team like the Knicks. All right. Can the offense look more cohesive? Can Dame and Giannis, if Giannis is back, then kind of do their thing? Can Chris be a part of it? Okay. You pass that test. Now you reach the, you know, the final boss, right? The team that has run away with the league this year. Can you beat the Boston Celtics and then go take on the MVP at Nikola Jokic or whoever it might be from Western Conference? Like, this is, this is why Doc Rivers was brought here. Not to be better in the regular season, even though that would have been great. Clearly, the Bucks had a huge, awesome record with Adrian Griffin, 30-13. So it wasn't about the regular season. It was about what you do in the playoffs. So all of that can disappear. All of the disappointment, all of the frustration, that can disappear if the Bucks make a run. But it requires the Bucks to make a run.
It requires a run. And it's prove it time for Doc Rivers, as you put it, Eric. I mean, it is certainly prove it time as we get into the postseason here. What are the changes he's made to the starting lineup over the course of the last few weeks is the addition of Pat Beverly. Give the perimeter defense a boost, I believe, was the mindset in that move. How have you evaluated that change? Has it improved the defense as much as we had hoped? Because obviously Dame, not known for his defense, he's an offensive guard. And when you lose a guy like Jrue Holiday, who's the best in the league at that position, you need to find a spark somehow. Has Pat Beverly provided that?
I think Pat Bev has helped out a little bit in that regard. I think they've been a little bit better defensively there. I also think one of the maybe unintended consequences, maybe intended consequences, was, you know, the fact that Patrick Beverley's not a great offensive player. He's got a torn ligament in his wrist. He can't really, like, shoot. And he's had some good shooting games, and he's been over 20 a couple times, which is kind of amazing, kind of a miracle. But he's not looking to shoot. When Malik Beasley touches the ball and he's wide open, because Malik Beasley shot 45% from the three-point line this year, the ball was going up. And that meant the offense didn't get to a second action. That meant you run a pick and roll on one side, it gets swung to Malik Beasley, who's wide open, ball's going up. You don't have the offensive flow. What we've seen in a couple games is really great offensive flow. And that might be possible. That might be able to, you know, really pay off for the Bucks. But also you could see it like it happened in Orlando, where Orlando just didn't cover Pat. They didn't care. Mm-hmm. Whatever. If you want to dribble the ball for 10 seconds of this possession, do whatever you want. We don't care. You can shoot it. You can drive it. You're fine. We're just going to make sure the other guys don't get the ball. So that to me is where it'll get interesting in the postseason is, you know, as you saw yesterday in Orlando, they just didn't have enough offense. And I thought they looked better offensively when Malik Beasley came into the game. And if it's a offensive starved team like the Orlando Magic, okay, you can get away with it. You don't have to be that good defensively. You just got to put up enough points to win. So watching how that formula kind of comes across here in the postseason is going to be really interesting, because the Pacers don't play a ton of defense. So can maybe try to be better defensively and have Patrick Beverley out there. But also you may need to get into a shootout. Like you have to try to figure out exactly what you need in this series. And Beverly's another option, but I don't know that he's, you know, the fix-all. He's not going to solve every problem that you have. He's just not that type of player at this point in his career.
No, I think you're spot on with that. Final thing for you, Eric, is, you know, we just called it prove it time for Doc Rivers. What is the conversations been around the locker room as they wrap up the regular season on the road over the course of the weekend? Does this team feel like they are still a championship team despite the uncertainty with Giannis, despite the uncertainty with the head coach, at least in the public eye? Do they still believe in that locker room, this is a championship team and it's time to prove it?
Yeah, I think undeniably all of those guys, you know, you look around that roster, one, you have champions. You have a guy like Chris Middleton, you have a guy like Bobby Portis, Pat Connaughton, Brooke Lopez. They've all done it. They have championship. So they can lean on that. And then I think with Damian Lillard, he's talked about, sure, there's a regular season and you have to get through it. And I like playing basketball. So obviously I like the regular season, but like I was brought here for the postseason. This is the reason why I was brought here. So I think you have some of that with Dame where it's like, this is the moment I've been waiting for. Like it wasn't a Tuesday in Indianapolis. It was next Tuesday in Indianapolis when it's a playoff game. Like, that's the one that I want to be around for. That's what I want to do. So I think you have all that. And then, you know, Doc Rivers hasn't really like sugarcoated it. Like yesterday he said, we need a lot of work and we're going to put a lot of work in this week to make sure that we're ready for our first game in the postseason. This is going to be a serious week for the Bucks. They need to get better. They need to be more focused. They need to make sure that, you know, they're ready to go for this playoff matchup. And I do think there's probably some hope that the fact that it is the playoffs will elevate that. There won't be those, you know, those moments where they aren't overwhelmingly professional, like Doc Rivers had said in Washington, D.C. a few weeks back. Like, those games, all of them count now. So I think that's kind of the hope that, one, there's a lot of faith, there's a lot of confidence, but also I do think there's going to be an increased level of focus here as the Bucks reach the postseason.
Yeah, and if you need to build in a chip to put on the shoulder, let's remember what happened in the first round last year, right? They do not want a repeat of that with some home court advantage as the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference. Eric, you're the best in the biz, buddy. Really appreciate you taking the time, giving some insights, and hopefully we've got a deep run incoming where we can do it again soon.
I hope you're right. That sounds fun to me.
You like to work.
I'm a worker. I'm a grinder.
He's a grinder.
I got a little crazy in me too, you know?
Yeah, you do. He's the best. Eric Nave from The Athletic covers the Bucks. Appreciate you, Eric. You're the best, man. I'm still nervous, but Eric providing, per usual, terrific insight on the expectations for the Bucks. And I think his point that he hit home multiple times throughout is this is a team that didn't really give a damn about how the regular season finished up, right? I don't think they're freaking out about an 88-point offensive output yesterday against the Orlando Magic, because it just doesn't really matter anymore. It's set. You know what you got to do. You got to win this first series. You got to get further than you did a year ago. Then in the second round, hopefully you have a healthy Giannis, completely healthy Giannis. And if you're playing New York, the Knicks, the 2 seed, they've got the home court advantage in that series. Win it on the road. And then if you get to the Eastern Conference Finals, which I think at this point, with the expectations and the way they've changed over the course of the last 6 months, is if you get to the Eastern Conference Finals, that's a successful season. However, if you use the same expectations you had in the preseason, when Adrian Griffin was the brand new head coach, and it's late into the offseason, shortly before the regular season picked up, you trade for a bona fide all-star, a bona fide all-pro, a bona fide Hall of Famer in Damian Lillard, that screams, hey, We're putting all the chips in the middle of the table. So if you're using the same expectations that when that happened, the day they traded for Dame, and the day, you know, Adrian Griffin began his tenure, very short-lived tenure as the head coach of this team, you expected a championship. And as roller coastery and rocky as it's been for the Milwaukee Bucks, it's kind of still the scope you have to use, despite you have an 82-game product to look at now, which was not championship level. But anything can happen in the postseason. And when you have Giannis and Damian Lillard, I feel like you should still be favored in a majority of your matchups until, hopefully, you get to the Eastern Conference Finals with Boston. You said you're completely checked out on the Bucks last week, Hunter. You've had the weekend to debrief a little bit,
yeah.
Take a breath. You know the matchup now, Milwaukee-Indiana, who they have not had a ton of success with this season. 1-4 against the Pacers were the Bucks, but all 5 of those games during the Adrian Griffin era. How do you feel 6 days out from game 1 of the Eastern Conference playoffs between the Bucks and the Pacers?
Well, since it's the playoffs now, I'm actually checked back in.
Okay, welcome back.
So, you know, it's good to be back.
You just took a week off or what?
Yeah, it was my all-star break.
There you go.
So, yeah, I'm back in. I'll pay attention. This team is just so frustrating because we keep talking about it. They have so much talent.
Mm-hmm.
All the talent that they have. And I really hope that it is just they're typical NBA guys and they understand that the regular season only matters as long as you get into the playoffs. And then it's a completely different season. I'm concerned that this is an old team, though, too.
Yeah, they are.
Like, they can't have these early series go 6-7 games.
No, not like, I mean, no. And obviously last year was not even that. It was a gentleman's sweep against the 8th-seeded Miami Heat, but... Yeah, no, you don't want to go long against Indiana.
No, because then you're going to have problems in the second round. You go long in the second round, and then you get into...
You're just fresh meat for Boston.
Yeah, right? And then it's game over, because they're even deeper than Milwaukee is.
Yeah.
They need to take care of business early, within 5 games in the first 2 rounds, if they want to beat Boston. Because Boston is going to go 6 or 7 games. If it's Milwaukee-Boston, it goes 6 or 7. You can't have gone 6 or 7 the first 2 rounds to then try and do that again to beat Boston and go to the finals.
Yeah, I like your opinion on that, and I think you're right. I think there's a point to be made for experience and how much that speaks in the postseason. And when you have guys like Eric just pointed out, like Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis, et cetera, who have been on a championship team before, you understand what it takes in the postseason. But how much legs do they have? Because they are older. But there is a case to be made that experience is good, too. So I don't know. We're going to find out. I think this Indiana series, though, you probably won't get your wish. I think these two are going to throw some haymakers at one another, and we might go six games.
Especially
if Giannis doesn't play the first game or two.
I have a weird feeling that a lot of these games are going to feel like that Brooklyn series from their championship
that was
season.
So damn where fun, though.
It was, but it's both teams are going to get blown out in one of these games, I think, by like 30 points. And then all of a sudden respond with a 30-point win the next night.
No doubt.
Because that's just the way that these teams are. And I think the Bucks kind of understand, like, okay, if they're down by, you know, 15, 17, something like that, and it's late enough where you're like, oh, maybe they could make a run, I think they'll just say as a team, hey, we're going to go get them next game. Because they understand that they need the legs. They need to be fresh late into a series if it does end up going long.
No doubt. No doubt. You're right on. We'll continue to talk Bucks as we lead up to game one on Sunday, and obviously we'll get real deep into it next week. Next week, really fun week on the sports calendar. First round, Bucks Pacers, NFL draft, both next week. So really, really fun sports calendar week coming up next week. I want to get into this, though, because this made some waves on Friday before our show, or right after our show, excuse me. I had heard him say this. I didn't really think anything of it. And now, having sat on it for a few days, This is something interesting, and you know, with the NFL draft coming up in 10 days, there is a serious question to ask about the Packers and offensive line. I said it last week. I'm pretty convinced they're going to go offensive line in the first round, assuming things fall the way they would like. They're not going to reach. That's never been their style. It's always been best player available. But solid offensive line class, and I think the Packers have a need at all three offensive line positions, tackle, guard, and center. Rob Domofsky, friend of show, ESPN NFL Nation reporter covering the Packers, was on Wilde and Tausch for his weekly appearance Friday on ESPN Wisconsin, had this to say about Zach Tom and some of the thoughts around him in 1265 Lombardi Avenue. Here's Domofsky.
Within the organization, they think Zach Tom is a really good, is a Pro Bowl right tackle, an all-pro guard, and a potential Hall of Fame center.
Ooh.
So there's your center.
There's your center. Josh Myers is entering the final year of his contract. He's been overall disappointing during his tenure with the Packers. He picked it up a little bit at the second half of the season, but there was even preseason mistakes that stuck out, regular season mistakes early on in that October slump, where Myers, I remember there was a snap that was fumbled and picked up, I think, by the Raiders, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, there were some clear as day mistakes to the untrained eye with Josh Myers. Zach Tom is a superstar. I think that was shown in his second year, but first year as a starter last year at right tackle. And, you know, it's pretty common, at least recently for the Packers, that they employ offensive linemen that can play multiple positions. I think Elgton Jenkins, who's going to join us on Wednesday, is the prime example of that. We've seen him play every position. He could probably play center at some point. But it makes you wonder what the Packers have in mind for their offensive line going into the 2024 season. You could stick with what you had, which would be, from left to right, Rashid Walker, Elgton Jenkins, Josh Myers, don't love that, but it would be, if we started the season today, him there, and then Sean Ryan, a right guard, and keep Zach Tom at right tackle. I think there's upgrades to be had there, right? As you've put all the investment, especially in the youth, on the offensive side of the ball, a wide receiver and tight end, and now bringing in a younger running back in Josh Jacobs, that's the place they can improve the most, is the offensive line. So how does it shake out? Is Zach Tom your center, and you draft with the 25th overall pick, or if you move up, you draft a tackle in the first round and assume they're playing either left tackle or right tackle? Maybe you move Rashid Walker to right tackle. This offensive line room is actually one of the more intriguing storylines for the Packers going into the NFL draft, because for teams that have high picks, right, it's more of those sexy position groups that you're attacking and gushing over as you do your draft prep as a fan. But for Packers fans, a lot of those big question marks are figured out. Think about the sexy, high-earning positions. Quarterback, you've got your quarterback. You know that. Jordan Love is your quarterback. Running back, Josh Jacobs, A.J. Dillon. They might draft one still, but you have a solid 1-2 punch in Jacobs and Dillon, despite the fact they are similar backs. Wide receiver, That's been us as Packers fans the last few years, the position we've been gushing over and studying and learning who will be the Packers of the future. We got that answer with Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs and Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks last year. Tight end, you drafted two of them high last year, and you liked their output as rookies. Tyler Davis was re-signed, so I don't know I would doubt they draft a tight end. So those are some of your sexy positions offensively. That leaves offensive line. Defensively, you feel good about edge. You're probably not attacking that in round one because he did that last year with Lucas Van Ness, who will be playing as a defensive end this year. Rashawn Gary's on a huge deal. Interior defensive line, you feel good despite Kenny Clark being a veteran at this point. He's still in his 20s. You like Devontae Wyatt. You hope he can bring it up a notch in his third year. So I imagine some of those pieces will be drafted for depth on day three. But when it comes to day one, unless Cooper DeJean's there for a safety or cornerback depth, I think you're going O-line. And to be real honest with you, for the first time since 2011, Derek Sherrod, the last offensive lineman the Packers selected in the first round, I'd be okay with this. But it's just not the sexiest of picks. But the good news is for you as a Packers fan is you don't need a sexy selection. You need depth. You need security for Jordan Love when he's dropping back. And I think O-line would be the play in the first round for the Packers. That's why I've convinced myself of it. And after hearing that from Rob Domofsky, I wonder if there will be some shuffling on the offensive line come week one in Brazil.
So I was interested in this, and I had to look it up for Zach Tom because I knew he played tackle at Wake Forest. According to his Wikipedia, his redshirt sophomore season, he was the team's starting center.
Interesting.
And that is the quarterback of the O-line. Like, you're setting the protections. That's something that if you have a center that can do that and can do it well and is on the same page with your quarterback, it takes a lot off of Jordan Love's plate to need to worry about. Because he just knows, like, okay, in this instance, let's say Zach Tom has it.
Yep.
So the fact that he's played the position already, that's huge for him. And having played all the other positions, he knows what it's like for those guys. I think he's the answer, and that makes me as a Cowboys fan, by the way, very happy, because that means Packers will go to the other spots, and potentially there's the center from Oregon who might be around then. I really like him. There's also that guard hybrid guy from Duke, so I feel really good.
Cowboys in the center is what you're saying?
They just need O-line.
Yeah, a lot of teams do.
Yeah, it's anywhere on the O-line for them. So the fact that the Packers might have one of those guys that might be there makes me feel really good. And Zach Tom is just so good.
He's great.
It's so hard to play all the positions.
He stays healthy. It's up from here. But you've got another guy in that room that does that too, right? Yep. Melton Jenkins.
Yeah.
And I thought Wilde and Tausch, and if you missed their show this morning, I thought they had a really fun conversation around, would you rather have Elton Jenkins or Zach Tom as your center? You've seen Elton do it more at the NFL level. I think Zach Tom only did it for 5 snaps or something. When Josh Myers was taken out of a game for, like, I think it was less than a series I forget what the injury was, but it was very brief. They moved Zach Tom there, and then he was done. He was back to right tackle. So it's an interesting conversation that Wilde and Tausch would have a lot more insight on than Hunter and I. But I think this question on YouTube, the ESPN Madison YouTube stream for Mad City Brew, is interesting. If the Packers move up in the draft, would they still take an O-lineman? Look, like I said, they are very subscribed to their theory of best player available over positional need. But I think in terms of depth and first-round talent, offensive line just makes a little bit more sense than cornerback or safety, or I guess it's not inside linebacker anymore, but the linebacker fit they need is probably a day two thing. So I just feel like O-line makes the most sense. But what we know about Goody is he doesn't really love to move up in the first round. The only time he moved up near the first round was when he drafted Christian Watson a few years ago. But Jaire was a guy he traded back for. His the year prior to him taking over, when the late Ted Thompson, his final draft, that was the T.J. Watt draft, when the Packers traded out of T.J. Watt, where they could have selected him, and ultimately took Kevin King early in the second round. Hopefully that mistake's not made again. But he's not typically a trade-up guy, at least in from what I remember, at least in the first round. But I wouldn't mind seeing it. I mean, they've got 11 picks. You could probably move up to 19, 20, 21 if you feel that strongly about somebody. Go get them, whether that be an O-lineman or whether it be Cooper DeJean or whether it be anybody else at a different position group that maybe we're not thinking about. defensive tackle, right? So I'm super excited. I'm full-blown in draft mode. I'm here. I've arrived. And we are 10 days away from the NFL draft.
Well, and you said it there, Strofe, that unless Goody loves a guy, and I mean absolutely loves him, odds are he's not going to trade up. Most GMs don't do that unless they just fall in love with somebody and they're like, I can't miss on this guy. I need them, and I have to do whatever it takes to get them. Mm-hmm. And then GMs will do it. So, and it's, O-line is such a rare thing to ever see somebody move up to go and get somebody. Like, you would need, it would need to be a, what they feel like is a generational talent. Like, I remember when Jake Long was coming out of Michigan and he was the first overall pick, and the Dolphins took him like the day before the draft officially, because they're like, he's our guy, we know it, mm-hmm. we're gonna take him. Mm-hmm. Like, unless it's that level of an O-lineman, odds are nobody's trading up for anybody. The only guy I could see it is, again, I think his name's Jackson Powers from Oregon, that center, because he's just head and shoulders above all the other centers.
Name-wise, he's probably up there, too. Powers, that's a good center name, lineman name, Powers. Joseph S. on the YouTube chat, ESPN Madison, my preferred trade-up is to use that pick 41 and get back up into the end of the first round, have two first-round picks. I'd love to see it, Joseph, but you might need to package both of those second-rounders or a second and a third to get back up to the end of the first if you're not trading 25. But yeah, of course, if you have two first-round picks, even if they're late, of course you're excited. That's what makes Thursday night so exciting and such a spectacle for the NFL draft. Really pumped up for that coming up next Thursday. It's a 7 o'clock Central time start for the NFL draft in Detroit, when ultimately the Bears will select Caleb Williams with the number one overall pick. And then onward from there. What happens with the quarterbacks? What happens with the receivers? Really good receiver draft. Excited to see. One of them is going to inevitably fall. Maybe not the 25, but if one of those big name receivers is there at 25, would you be? I mean, I know the Packers won't do it because they haven't drafted a wide receiver in the first round since Javon Walker, and they feel pretty comfortable about where they're at that position. But I'm just saying,
that'd be so weird.
It would
with
be.
How
it
young will, that happen. Room is, like, I feel like they just need to keep giving those guys reps. So it'd be so weird to just be like, yeah, let's go and take another young guy when there's talent other spots in this draft and guys that we need. Like, it'd just be a weird pick. But we thought Jordan Love was a weird pick. So, you know, what do I know?
The reason I say that, though, Hunter, is because I just feel like the Packers oftentimes are very unpredictable. Jordan Love, I had a feeling they were going to go quarterback that year, and they did. But it was not a foregone conclusion that they were going to go quarterback, because they probably should have gone receiver. Last year in the first round, I was expecting Lucas Van Ness. I liked the pick when it happened, but I was hoping, again, they'd go wide receiver. They addressed that the following day and had some hits in Dontavian Wicks and Jaden Reed, who was their second-round pick. But it's never as obvious as you think with the Packers in the draft. And that's why I've talked myself into O-line, because it's been 13 years since they've done it in the first round. They have some need, but I mean, I just rattled off what their starting offensive line would be if the season started today. And I don't feel particularly uncomfortable with that, but I do feel like there's improvements to be had from guys like Josh Myers. And I like Rashid Walker, but if you can get a great tackle to protect Jordan Love's blindside on a rookie deal... I mean, obviously, Rashid's also on a rookie deal, but it is intriguing. Yeah. So I don't have the answers. I can only predict, and maybe even, you know, wisely predict what direction they can go, just given some of the things you know about this team and some of the patterns that Goody has shown in past drafts. But I don't have the answer, and I'm excited for about 9:30 p.m. next Thursday when we do find out.
I just feel like, you know, the O-linemen that are expected to be available around that mid to late 20 area, mm-hmm. any one of those guys outside of, I think, really Zach Tom and Elton Jenkins, like, they'd be upgrades for the Packers O-line. Any receiver that probably falls, I don't feel like they're a huge upgrade from what the Packers already have.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with defensive backs, outside of maybe like a linebacker. Like, any of the other positions, I just feel like, okay, you're drafting them, but are they necessarily a big upgrade? Where O-line, it feels like, okay, you take any one of these guys that are going to be there, you can put them in, and they're going to improve that position group.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good opinion. And, you know, it's never a gimme either, right? I mean, Derek Sherrod, and injuries played a role in that, but he was not a hit. The year before, they went O-line as well. That's when they drafted Brian Bulaga, who that year became the youngest player to ever play in a Super Bowl, starting a Super Bowl, excuse me. And he had a terrific career in Green Bay.
Even with short arms.
Even with short arms, yeah. He's not here. You should allow him to defend himself. I met his parents on Friday. I forgot to mention that. So we were doing this fun little trend, and we'll see this video coming out at some point. And that is, you know, I went around the Packers tailgate tour in Sun Prairie on Friday, and I asked people to do their best Brian Bulaga Awo impression. And I saw a woman wearing a Bulaga jersey. So I went up to them, and I said, hey, I'm here with. They introduced themselves, and I believe his father's name is Tom. And he goes, Bulaga. And it clicked. I was like, oh. So I ended up chatting with them for a while. Wonderful people. But they got the surprise, Brian. He didn't know they were there. So that was a really cool moment as well. We got to catch up with Blue. Maybe after the draft, if they do go O-line in the first round, we'll have to catch up with them. All right. You learn something new every day. It's time now for What Strofe Learned. I learned something new today that I am very excited about. And that is that ESPN Films has announced it is greenlit a 30 for 30 documentary covering the late, great Stuart Scott, my all-time favorite sports broadcaster. He broke down so many barriers. He was terrific. Booyah. Cool as the other side of the pillow. And just a terrific human being. And there's a lot of quotes in the release from ESPN and 30 for 30, but we know how good those documentaries are. Every sports fan has watched 30 for 30s before and has their favorite. This could be a front runner for my new favorite. So really excited to hear about Stuart Scott, his life, obviously, unfortunately, his battle with cancer, the amazing ESPY speech, but that is in production from ESPN Films and 30 for 30, a documentary around Stuart Scott, who just lived an unbelievable, exemplary life, and I'm really excited to see what comes of that one. So, fantastic news from 30 for 30, who always puts out bangers. This one will certainly be one as well.
If you're doing a Mount Rushmore of just studio anchors.
Yeah. Studio anchors of any network?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, you've got to go Stuart Scott on there. I think Dan Patrick.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Keith Olbermann. Because those two together, they set the standard for what ESPN became.
No, that's fair.
And SportsCenter became.
But when do you get into the likes of like James Brown from CBS?
I know.
Ernie Johnson from Turner.
Okay, so we'll take Keith off of there.
Yeah, I don't think
so.
Keith
Stuart
belongs.
And Dan are on.
I'm okay with Dan. Yeah.
And then,
that's tough.
Bob Costas?
Bob Costas has a very, very good case. Yes. Probably Bob Costas. I just watched, by the way, he did an interview talking about O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, and O.J. tried to call him.
O.J. tried to call him from the Bronco. Bob Costas, of all people. I never knew that until last week when we found out O.J. Simpson passed away.
So was it the whole thing where he talked about, for people that don't know this story, so Bob's working the NBA Finals, and it was on NBC. At the time.
Yeah.
OJ tries to call. The call gets routed into the truck. The producer didn't believe him that it was actually OJ Simpson. That's hung right. up on him in the middle of the white Bronco chase. OJ got hung up on because he wanted Bob because he's like, Bob, you'll give me a fair interview. You'll actually listen to me. So he wanted to talk to Bob Costas. Got hung up on.
That's absolutely absurd. But anyway, all right, there we go. Fun way to wrap up Monday's show. As mentioned, Packers guard Elgton Jenkins, Packers guard, tackle, center. I mean, Packers offensive lineman Elgton Jenkins will join us Wednesday. Our conversation from Friday at the Packers tailgate tour will air that Wednesday. Really fun conversation, about 10 minutes long with Elgton Jenkins of the Packers ahead of the NFL draft. He'll join us Wednesday. Colin Russo, of course, will join us Friday for a Colin Russo Friday. But exciting week ahead, man. Lots to get into. We're going to dive deep into the NFL draft. We'll do some more of that heading into next Thursday as well in the Bucks playoffs. Tip off Sunday, Bucks Pacers and Rand won the 3 and 6 seed in the Eastern Conference. So plenty to get into. Enjoy your Monday. Enjoy the beginning of your week. We'll talk to you Wednesday beginning at 12:30 on the ESPN Milwaukee, ESPN Madison YouTube channels and available wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Mr. Relevant. My name is Alex Strofe. We'll talk to you then. Peace.